Mike's would have had. The man had been confused by her appearance, but he hadn't jumped automatically to the conclusion, cop, any more than the man on the street had. And wasn't likely to, she decided, watching him lean confidentially toward Missy's cleavage, spectacularly exhibited in a U-necked cerise t-shirt. Yolanda's the one with the ponytail? He asked. Today I think she has a braid. One braid. It's very nice, said Missy firmly. And Scylla wondered how this information keyed into the desires of the man with the briefcase, how his excitement waxed and waned with ponytails and braids, nice girls and nasty ones, what it was, finally, that he was paying for. But at that moment, Yolanda appeared, white-smocked and round-cheeked, with a thick caramel-colored braid that hung to the middle of her back, and led him through the bead curtains that separated the reception area from the corridor connecting with the four private studios. Both of them waited for the sound of a door opening and closing. Then Missy said, "Hey." "Hey," said Scylla, sitting down in one of the director's chairs flanking the front desk and shrugging out of her raincoat. "You're looking good," she observed. Missy looked down into her neckline with satisfaction. "I've been keeping well. It isn't easy this time of year. God knows what's floating around, pollen, dust. But I've got this new balsam tea. It smells like compost, and sometimes the clients complain, but I'm up to 4 or 5 cups an evening." She patted her stomach. "It really flushes you out. Want to try some?" "No, thanks," said Scylla, who did not share Missy's enthusiasm for purges. "Business is okay?" "Business is booming. Business has never been so good. I've taken on 2 more girls." Missy grinned at Scylla's reflexive wince. "Girls is a technical term, you know. It's not a diminutive. It's a name for what they do. If I called them women, the Johns wouldn't know what I was talking about." "Girls and Johns?" "Clients to their faces. Girls to their faces, too, the Johns' faces. Hey, but we're all women here. Nobody here but us women." Missy stretched expansively. "You're looking good." "Thanks." Scylla supplied the qualifier, considering. Considering the way she dressed, did her hair, didn't do her makeup. Missy, despite her passion for branches of knowledge that might not have seemed obviously aligned with her kind of massage therapy, disciplines like acupuncture, biofeedback, and herbal medicine, could never understand why other women chose to look any other way than flamboyantly sexual. On the occasion of their first conversation over chamomile tea after the natural healing class they both were attending at the alternative university — the alternative university was physically the same university as the degree-granting institution from which Scylla had graduated 4 years earlier, but at night and, as it were, on the side — Scylla had tactfully tried to put the issue in terms of personal style. "I look good in dark colors," she'd objected, in response to Missy's abrupt offer of a makeover. "I'm not the type to stand out, that's all. You look..." "I look like a hooker," Missy had said, pouring more tea for both of them from the dented brass teapot provided by the restaurant they were in, which was called Sprouts. "I am a hooker, more or less, except now I'm on the administrative end." "I'm a cop," Scylla had confessed. Missy hadn't batted an eye. "You look like a cop." "You're kidding." "No, I don't mean that. I mean you look like plain clothes. You're wearing very plain clothes." "I always have," said Scylla humbly. "If you'd let me fix you up," Missy had insisted, "you'd be a knockout." But Scylla had not felt that anything Missy could do would improve her situation in the HMPD and had declined. She continued to decline every time Missy renewed the offer during the subsequent 5 years of their acquaintance. The exchange of confidence was important, however, in that it had made them friends. They had remained friends, as well as cop and informant, the latter perhaps the more intimate relationship. The informing began because of their shared concern with preserving the human body in a state that both of them were inclined to call natural. Although, as Scylla generously pointed out, there was a sense in which activities as disparately therapeutic as standing upright and not dying of the Black Death might be called artificial. Partly out of the same nexus of convictions that included the natural healing class and the balsam tea, partly out of some commitment far more personal and passionate about which Scylla was careful not to inquire, Missy hated drugs. During Scylla's first visit, off duty, very strained, to Shea Plush, Missy had shrieked, "Recreational substances, my ass!" at a startled insurance executive who had been reported to her as wanting to do a line during his $20 special, and had gone on at the top of her voice to inform him, along with Scylla, all the masseuses on the premises, and a good half block of First Avenue in either direction, that she ran a clean shop. Clean was, of course, in the eye of the purveyor, since Missy's shop regularly purveyed hand jobs, blow jobs, and the occasional vaginal penetration for the truly conservative and persistent. But these activities were themselves clean in the sense that Missy meant the word, which had nothing to do with the law and little to do with the notion of prurient activities as good, clean fun that the First Avenue Association was currently trying to sell the city council. Clean fun is when you don't get anything from doing it, she'd told Scylla on a later occasion when they'd learned to relax with each other's professional identities. Crabs, pregnant, the dry heaves. Busted? Scylla had inquired. You can always get busted. By the way, I never said any of this. I'm not even having this conversation, Scylla had affirmed. But she had understood the principle. Sex at Shea Plush meant that people didn't go out with anything they hadn't come in with. John people, massage therapist people. Microorganisms didn't circulate at Shea Plush. They remained at their point of origin. The principle had become increasingly popular as the AIDS epidemic gained momentum and attention. Last year, over another battered brass teapot at Sprouts, Missy had announced that she was raising the price of hand jobs another $10. It's like I just invented this new way to get off, she crowed. Guys who've always figured out that was one thing they could do just as well themselves are now coming in talking about technique. I ask you, technique. She had waved the waitress over and in an uncharacteristically expansive gesture demanded carrot cake for both of them. Complex carbs, sweetie, she'd explained. It's cold out on those streets. But Scylla had still been surprised. Missy's attitude towards the gooey end of the health food spectrum was usually more suspicious. Adele Davis rather than Jane Brody. I'll tell you about technique, Missy had continued after they'd put down their smeared forks and allowed the waitress to add more hot water to the soggy chamomile flowers. They can talk about it like it was expertise, develop finger muscles, timing, but what they really come for is information. Scylla shook her head in disbelief. I'm telling you, and they're shy about it, that's the other thing. They edge in on the subject. Like, the other day, this guy was lying there, and Petra was sort of moving in on his dick, you know, how we start out like it's just this massage, and then gradually we sort of center on this protruding thing here, like, boy, here's something else I can rub. We give full value, in other words. Scylla, who didn't know, stored this piece of information away for consideration at leisure. And this guy sort of cleared his throat, and then he said, I notice you're not wearing rubber gloves. She whooped. And Scylla began to laugh with her. They hunched over the table, snorting and muttering, rubber gloves, until Missy finally combed the auburn hair back from her forehead with the fingers of both hands and resettled herself in her squeaky cane chair. So, of course, Petra goes into a kind of holding pattern around the dick and says, why, no, you see, the issue is exchange of fluids, and off they go, 20 minutes of question and answer, like Petra was the AIDS hotline. Which, in a sense, she is. We charge for the extra time, of course, but I keep thinking we should charge for the learning experience. Like here, I'm the alternative university. You're rendering a great service, Scylla assured her. Speaking of which, does this mean there's less demand for the other stuff other than the hand jobs? Missy had grinned. That's the beauty of it. It's all booming. They know I'm clean, and suddenly that's all that matters. Like I'm buying dental dams by the gross. Looking around the reception room now, Scylla was inclined to believe that business had gone on booming since the last conversation. The walls were newly painted in a calmer and somehow more suggestive pink than the mottled salmon of her previous visits. The red chenille draperies around the display window were clean, if balding in spots, and Missy's desk was a fairly elaborate three-sided Formica unit that might have been intended to house a computer terminal. Maybe the computer was next, Scylla thought, but then dismissed the idea. Missy would never display anything to suggest that she kept records. Although, of course, she did keep records, meticulous records. That was part of her value as informant. Not just in her head, either. There was a safe deposit box to which Scylla would be directed if anything happened, as Missy ominously put it. So, no computer, but distinctly upscale like so much of First Avenue these days. It was a short step to golden oak and designer sweats, and Scylla wondered if she should introduce her idea. But at that moment, Missy got to the point. "Here you got yourself a rapist," she said. Scylla shifted uncomfortably in her director's chair. Missy was due to replace these, she reflected. They were a short-term solution, something cushioned that swiveled. Puffy and pink wouldn't be bad, in keeping with the implicit motif of vaginal walls, not golden oak. "Me and Mike," she agreed. Mike was all over the TV news this morning. She had been eating cereal when his face filled the screen, blinking and mint-colored. "He wasn't the best choice for a nighttime close-up," had been her first thought. Too pale, pasty under fluorescent lights, worse here with the quartz lights bouncing off the institutional green overlook walls. Off camera, Lindgren had cried, "Are you one of us?" And Mike had furrowed his brow as if he'd been asked to name the 12th president. Not calculated to reassure, but that couldn't be helped now. She herself had been determinedly out of reach, out of her apartment and her plain clothes, too, off duty. The guy had been a carpenter who restored old wooden boats, a winning combination. She preferred men who were good with their hands. There was more to be said for technique than Missy was allowing. "I saw him," said Missy. "I can't get over that he's your partner. Your work partner, I mean. You should send him down here sometime. I'd do him special." Scylla shrugged. "Not your type," said Missy. "My type. I like dark and sensitive. He's got a great mouth." "He's got a wife," said Scylla. Missy mimed horror. "Oh, come on. He's not the issue. The issue is you're right. We've got this rapist. Or really, we haven't got him. Haven't got anything more than the stuff that was all over the Express this morning." They sat in speculative silence for a moment. Then Missy asked, "So what do you want from me?" "I'm not really sure." Scylla reflected that she'd gone to Missy in the same way she might have consulted one of the professors in the psychology department, except, of course, that she granted Missy more authority. "I don't know why. I thought you might know about rapists. Rapists in general. That's the level I'm on right now." "I know about rapists," said Missy grimly. "You think because guys come here, they don't go out and knock women over the head? They get rid of it peacefully or something?" "No," said Scylla, "I don't think that. You know I don't. But you'd be surprised at the people who do." Missy's ironic formulation, in fact, summed up prevailing popular wisdom on the subject of rape. Never mind that the theory making rapists thwarted hedonists, virile types, prevented from expressing their sexuality by a repressive society, had gone the way of orgone boxes once the first studies of convicted rapists began coming out in the mid-70s. Old lore dies hard. Even in patrol school, she'd learned that rapists were just men pining to get laid. At the same time, she'd been instructed that they were an entirely different species from the heavy breathers and flashers and peeping toms and First Avenue porn shop and massage parlor patrons, that there was a category of harmless sexual exploitation, rigidly demarcated from the physical violence of rape. If you carried that logic to its conclusion, you'd come up with the observation that it was impossible to rape a prostitute. Thus, the attitude of the HMPD to the first depredations of the hooker hacker. Presumably, that embarrassment had led to changes in the patrol training course. Presumably, new recruits to the force weren't being led to regard voyeurs and exhibitionists and Johns as harmless and rather sweet. Presumably, although Scylla wasn't going to put money on it. Furthermore, popular wisdom maintained that there was no crossover. Heavy breathers didn't evolve into flashers. Flashers didn't escalate exposure into attack. The studies of the last decade and a half, the only studies to have been done of actual rape, actual rapists, blew these theories out of the water. But Scylla had already known better from her experiences on foot patrol in the West Downtown area, and before that from her experiences in the bars of the Old Town Square area, and before that from her experiences on the campus of the university. It was all a matter of degree. The jokes about the guys standing unzipped in the bushes around the sorority houses during finals week weren't jokes anymore when one of the guys jumped a woman going to her 8:30 exam, kicked her in the head till she was unconscious, and dragged her into those same bushes for a leisurely fuck. Or maybe it was a matter of audience. There were jokes about that guy being told in the fraternity houses, that funny guy with his direct approach. Scylla tried not to think too much about the popular wisdom. The problem is that the kind of rapist I get here probably isn't the kind you've got. Missy rubbed the spot between her eyebrows where mystics and certain partisans of holistic healing locate the third eye. Yeah, we get them here. A lot of them are proud of not paying for it. Not having to pay for it is how they talk, as if forcing somebody was the same as having her offer it to you. And they really believe these two things are the same. I'll tell you what I think about those guys, the kind of rapist I get here. I think they believe the girl automatically wants what they want. He wants to be whacked off, she must want to whack him off. It makes her hand feel great, you know what I mean? Scylla nodded. So he wants to fuck her, she must want to be fucked by him. Like she's advertising her desire by just being. I know what you mean, said Scylla. We had a guy who broke into a woman's apartment while she was sleeping, raped her, and then wrote down his telephone number in case she wanted to get together again. Missy looked dubious. You sure it was the right number? You think we didn't follow it up? Sure it was the right number. We traced it and there he was, getting ready to go up another fire escape. That's an extreme case, of course. I wish more of them would write down their phone numbers. Well, I don't think you have one of those right now, said Missy. I think you've got a murdering bastard, like that guy your boss finally got a couple years ago. The guy that killed Prosses and buried them in the state parks. That kind of psycho. That kind can pass, too. Scylla had still been a patrol officer when Anna directed the decoy operation that netted the hacker. The decoy had been a patrol academy classmate of hers, Lori Brangman. Lori had left the force on a disability discharge after the grab. The disability discharge was also Anna's doing and technically didn't apply because the cuts had healed into scars and there was no permanent nerve or muscle damage. But a psychological discharge on your record could jeopardize your professional standing for your entire life, even if you went into something that had nothing to do with police work. Eventually, Lori would go into something that had nothing to do with police work. Right now, she was still at home with her mother. A lot of people think he's a murdering bastard, said Scylla. But at the moment, we have no evidence that it's murder. It's murder on his mind anyway, said Missy. Look at the way he goes after gay guys. Look at what he says to them. Scylla looked startled. How do you know what he says to them? The information was one of the few things that Anna Blessing had insisted on withholding from the press. Missy smirked. I have my sources, she said. You're not the only person with good contacts. Scylla knew she couldn't push this one any further. So far, it's gay men, she said. On the basis of two incidents, we can't say we got a murdering bastard, or we can say we got a murdering bastard who's possibly targeted gay men. Or possibly he's targeted people alone in parking lots after midnight, or people whose names begin with L. Two incidents don't let us define a pattern all that well. He calls them faggots, Missy pointed out, but I get your point. We can't assume anyone's safe. There's no reason to assume it's restricted to gay men, said Scylla. Sounds familiar, said Missy.